More of Lake Effect Now, I'm Stephanie Lecce. Death is universal, but so is the seeming reluctance to talk about it. But why? Two local filmmakers set out to explain Americans' difficulty discussing the dying process and preparing for life's end. Michael Bernhagen and Terry Caldestall interviewed more than 100 experts and regular people from around the country. The result was the 2011 documentary Consider the Conversation. The award-winning film has aired hundreds of times on PBS stations across the country and is now out on DVD. And you can catch it at a local screening next week, sponsored by Horizon Home Care and Hospice. Horizon's Kelly Andrew joined filmmaker Bernhagen in studio with me earlier this year to talk about how the national conversation around death and dying has changed since the film came out. Bernhagen began by talking a little bit about the project's mission.
This film is an intimate story about the American struggle with communication and preparation for end of life, and it contains the perspectives of people going through that process, terminally ill patients and their families, and the people who care for them, their doctors, their nurses, their social workers, their clergy, and some very prominent national experts in end-of-life care. And it's important to understand that this film does not give any particular answer. It's not a hospice film, for example, and it's certainly not a film about physician-assisted suicide. What it does is it gives the viewer some of the questions that they and only they can think about and answer for themselves. For example, when it's your time to die, where would you like to be and with whom? What kind of care would you want? Why is hope not the same thing as having a plan? What's next? What does quality of life mean to you? Who should be responsible for leading us through this conversation? And what matters most to you at end of life? How would you like to live at the end of your life? And as such, this film, I think, aligns beautifully with the concept of advanced care planning because of that focus. And advanced care planning is all about the process of talking with people about how they want to live at the end of life, documenting those wishes, and aligning care with those wishes when push comes to shove.
Michael, one of the interesting points that was brought up during the interview that you and Terry did with Bonnie North a couple of years ago when the film first came out was the idea that the way that we die today has changed from the way we've died in the past.
Absolutely. The reason I think our culture struggles with talking about end of life is because of American medicine's success at fighting disease and extending life. By that I mean where we die has fundamentally changed. 100 years ago, most of us died at home surrounded by friends and family. Today, however, 75% of us can expect to die in a hospital or a skilled nursing facility. How we die has also changed. 50 years ago, most of us died suddenly from heart attacks, accidents, and strokes. But today, most of us can expect to die slowly and incrementally from one or more severe chronic diseases. And we've increased average life expectancy by 7 years since 1970 alone. But that isn't necessarily lucky because increased quantity of life often comes at the expense of reduced quality of life for most people. Collectively, Terry and I refer to this as the problem of unintended consequences. That is, American medicine's success has created a void in our culture, a void that is often filled with fear, denial, and the illusion that death is somehow optional. And the result is unparalleled suffering, suffering that is certainly physical in nature, but it's also emotional, social, spiritual, and yes, sometimes financial.
I would agree. I think there's also a change happening right now with the baby boomer generation. As they age, they're much more determined to have things the way that they want and do things the way that they had planned rather than what a physician might say or what, you know, someone else might advise them. So I really think end-of-life care and this conversation is going to come into play a great deal in the upcoming years because people aren't necessarily satisfied with the way we've always done things. People want change, and now's the time to talk about what the ideal end-of-life experience is, and that's different for everyone. I think that's one thing I've learned in hospice, is that each individual has a very different perspective on what they see as a good death.
One of the unintended consequences of American medicine's success is that we produced what seems to be system-centered care instead of person-centered care. By person-centered, I mean care that's tailored to the thoroughly discussed, well thought out, and understood wishes of the individual, whether that means aggressive treatment, do everything you can to keep me alive, I don't want to die, or whether that means comfort care like hospice care or palliative care, or some combination of the two for a certain period of time. In order to achieve that kind of culture change, however, I think our work with regard to the film has to do two things. Number one, it has to inspire the general public to think and talk and act upon these wishes. And number two, it has to inspire the medical system to create an environment in which these types of conversations are normal, they're operationalized, and they thrive. Therein lies the greatest challenge, I think.
Well, so then let me ask, Michael, what kind of response have you seen to the film since it debuted? I mean, it's obviously been shown on public television stations across the country. It's won awards. Do you see the conversation changing?
The response to the film is something that we could only have dreamed of, quite frankly, Stephanie. To Terry and me, the most important thing that has happened has been that our work has inspired the Wisconsin Medical Society to launch a project called Honoring Choices Wisconsin. That's a physician-led initiative that will make facilitated conversations about end-of-life wishes a standard part of patient care here in the Badger State. Basically, in this program, doctors will champion the importance of advanced care planning with patients at a time when they're not dying, when they're not in crisis, typically beginning at age 55 or when diagnosed with a serious illness. For willing patients, then, they'll be referred to a certified advanced care planning facilitator. That's someone who has the skills to conduct these difficult conversations, who has the time, because our doctors don't have the time, and who have the ability to meet with patients and families wherever they might reside. And then, of course, eventually there'll be extensive community outreach and education done by the Wisconsin Medical Society in collaboration with the medical faith, business communities, public media, and other important constituencies. Now, this project's going to take some time to unfold, Stephanie, because what we're talking about here is culture change, and culture change doesn't happen overnight. The first of three consecutive years of pilot projects will launch March 1st here in southern Wisconsin. There are seven integrated healthcare delivery systems who have agreed to participate in this project. But at its core, what it's really all about is preventing unnecessary suffering at end of life, suffering that, as I said before, is physical, emotional, spiritual, social, and yes, sometimes financial. And when you look at it in this context, Honoring Choices Wisconsin believes that talking with people about their wishes at a time when they're not dying is good preventive medicine, just like it is to take your child in to be immunized against measles, mumps, and rubella, just like it is to go in for your annual physical to get your mammogram, et cetera. So this is a really significant historical event process unfolding here in Wisconsin.
Kelly, from the perspective of Horizon Home Care and Hospice, when you see something like this being implemented statewide, what does that mean for the work that you're doing?
I think it's wonderful. You know, often when someone comes to hospice, a social worker can help have this conversation and move things forward. But it's interesting that more people don't have this conversation before that crisis begins. And I had an interesting conversation a few weeks back with an undergrad class at Concordia. And what I told them was, this is one of your rights. You know, you wouldn't want to give up your rights to make decisions for yourself. So it's really important that we all consider this. And I'm getting more and more requests coming in through Horizon for community presentations. People want to know more about how to do this, how to have that conversation. What are my rights? How specific can I get about my wants and needs at end of life? So I'm just thrilled that this movie is out there, and I think it is having a wonderful impact on people at least being open to hearing about what's available to them and how they can prepare for a time that's going to be very difficult, no matter what the circumstances for them and probably for their family and loved ones.
I have to wonder if this film didn't come out at just the right time, that it seems like maybe there were other shifts going on coinciding with this film exploring this topic that really has been so taboo in our culture. What do you think has influenced making people more receptive to the film's message and really, as we've seen, having this huge impact on how we talk about end-of-life care?
It's a great question, Stephanie. Obviously, we've done a lot of research as we've put this film together, and one of the areas that we took a close look at was the psychology of adult learning. How does a culture move from ignorance on a particular issue toward mastery? And there's four different phases involved in that learning, if you will. And 4 years ago, we were at that phase, I think, in our culture that the folks in adult psychology would refer to as unconscious incompetence. That means as a culture, we didn't know that we didn't know how to do these conversations. And then Sarah Palin came out in 2009 and referred to coverage under the healthcare reform proposal for conversations between patients and their physicians as death panels. And that called a lot of attention to this subject. And at the time, it was pretty painful. But looking back in retrospect, she gave us a great gift because it allowed us to kind of think about this issue
in a different way. And how it's communicated.
And how it's presented. And so now 4 years later, I think we're at that very significant phase in our development as a culture, a phase that is referred to as conscious incompetence. That means we now know that we don't know. And therein lies the motivation to change, and we're seeing evidence of that right now.
Tell me about how individuals have responded to this, and Kelly, if you've seen any direct influence from this.
I think it's interesting. Anyone who sees it is going to now think about it. You can't help it. So when I invited my team from work over to my home and we watched the documentary and, you know, decided to chat about it afterwards, everyone that sees it that I've encountered says, oh, my husband and I need to talk about this. Or, you know, I don't quite know what I would want or what my thoughts are on this. And I've got to wrestle with that a little bit. So in my mind, anyone who sees this movie will be changed. And, you know, once you start to see that change happening, you also see bigger things happening. So more conversations taking place, more people who are educated about their rights in this and will help drive our health system to embrace this and use it. So I'm very hopeful and encouraged by what I see with individuals who watch the movie.
So more people are talking. We obviously have this amazing initiative starting up here in Wisconsin very soon. But what's the next step, Mike?
Oh, well, Terry and I believe that our work is only just beginning. Recently, we began the second film in the Consider the Conversation series. It's subtitled A Documentary About Unintended Consequences. And it's a film that will focus on what we believe to be the fundamental building block on positive change with regard to this issue. And it will be about the patient-doctor relationship, what happens in that interaction, what doesn't happen, and probably what should happen. And these are 18-month projects making these films, and we're about a third of the way into it. And during the first production phase, we traveled throughout the country to talk with doctors. And these physicians have been sharing with us the stories of why they were called to become doctors. And many of them have become aware that the reason they became a doctor has changed. They were originally called to become a doctor to care for people. But unbeknownst to them, beginning with their medical training into residency and then, you know, joining a practice or a hospital organization, somehow the emphasis became on curing people. And that's caused tension. And they've realized that this is driven a wedge, unintentionally driven a wedge into the patient-doctor relationship. And so in phase two of our production, we'll be trying to capture the patient perspective on that relationship. And our belief is that if we can't get it right in that most fundamental and basic of human interactions, then other things that we do, legislation, reimbursement, policies, don't really matter.
Michael Bernhagen is Director of Community Engagement with Rainbow Hospice Care in Jefferson, Wisconsin. He's also a co-producer of the documentary film Consider the Conversation alongside filmmaker Terry Caldestall. Kelly Andrew is with Horizon Home Care and Hospice in Milwaukee. Horizon is sponsoring a screening of the film on October 16th at Marcus North Shore Cinema in Mequon. You can find more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. From advocating for court case dogs to finding the lost dogs of Wisconsin, we learn about efforts to make sure man's best friend is protected. That's next when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.